You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Whenever money gets tight, the debate over whether art and art education are necessities flares up again. One of the consequences of the current financial crisis is that museums are worried about losses of funding, and school systems faced with serious budgetary cutbacks have to decide whether to sustain arts programs or devote the bulk of their funds to No Child Left Behind-related programs. These are some of the issues two panels of artists and educators will be discussing on Sunday and Monday as part of the Stella Adler Studios Harold Klerman Arts Festival. And joining me now are two of the participants in those panels, Academy Award-nominated actress Rosie Perez, an old friend of this show, and Herbert Cole, the noted educator, author, and activist. Also with us is Tom Oppenheim, president and artistic director of the Stella Adler Studio of Acting, and I'm very pleased to welcome you all to the show. Hi.
Hi.
So, Tom, how long does the festival last?
It's 10 days. It began on Friday, October the 17th. We end on October the 27th, Monday, October the 27th.
I would have thought that a festival named after a great man of the theater at a school founded by a great woman of the theater would be focused largely on acting, but the opening night's focus was art and social activism, spotlight on Africa. Is social activism an important aspect of the arts as far as you're concerned?
I think so, yes. Very much in terms of the history of the studio and of the life of Stella and Harold. They weren't overtly political people, but they were people who were deeply engaged in life, deeply engaged in the world, and part of that engagement had to do with a rigorous involvement with what was happening in front of them and what was happening around the world, and their sense of the vitality with which one acted and made theater and made art, and the relationship to the injustices and atrocities around the world was, I think, very, very deep in them.
The closing night's focus is on art and educational justice. I'll be moderating a discussion with Whoopi Goldberg, Felicia Rashad, Anna Deavere Smith, and you, Rosie. Is educational justice something that's been a concern of yours for a while?
It's been a concern of mine even when I was a child because, as you know, as we've discussed in the past, I'm a product of the inner-city public school system. Although I spent a few years in the Catholic school system, when I transferred from Catholic school into the public school system, I couldn't believe how far behind my classmates were. And it was really sad and really disgusting. And as a young adult, I feel that the reason why we are not competitive in the world as we should be is because of lack of education. And I feel that the lack of empathy and sympathy for the human being standing next to you is a direct result of the arts being removed from the schools.
So are you talking as somebody who is an actress or somebody who's just concerned about what goes on in the world?
Both. As a person who is concerned with what's going on in the world, I mean, even when you walk outside of your house and someone is rude to you, they just don't have a common courtesy that is in place because their heart isn't big enough. And in regards to the world at large, look at the state that we're in. You know, when I saw the movie W, you know, basically the movie was stating that, you know, George W. Bush went to war because of psychological problems and emotional problems he had with his father that he couldn't articulate and couldn't express. Well, maybe if he had art in his life, he would be able to express, and we wouldn't be at a war, a war of his at our expense.
Although we don't know whether that's actually true or whether that's Oliver Stone's psychological take on George W. Bush.
True, but I'm talking about
art,
the movie.
Actually, this is where art and politics actually do converge in an odd way. Because in the end, so much of what we know about history, we know from art, and art sometimes clarifies things, sometimes muddies things.
Yes, you are completely correct. But also as an actress, you know, I the more art and education enriches my life, the better actor I have become. Because you cannot just grasp from the surface as an artist. You have to go deep and you have to go beyond yourself. And you can only do that through education.
And Herb Cole, that's been your philosophy as well as an educator, hasn't it?
Well, certainly. you know, as an educator, my job is to help young people develop the capacity to be articulate, sensitive, to be able to argue but to listen, to be able to think, and even more, to have decent and sensitive judgment. And really, it's through the arts that one begins to develop the kind of sensibility that allows one to become an intelligent and active citizen. So for me, the arts are not an add-on in school, but they're at the very center of learning, and they're very fundamental. And I think that, in a sense, we do leave children behind, in many senses, when we deprive them of art. And I think depriving the kids of art is, even in the most cynical sense, a way of taking away their power to make decisions for themselves, their power to trust their imaginations, their power to flow with the idea that the world might be different than it is, that things could be better than they are. So, in a sense, there is a strategy behind minimalizing the arts. And the strategy, it really has at its bottom the idea that we need stupid kids. We don't need intelligent kids. We need them to perform on standardized tests, but not to perform as really active, socially sensitive, and artistically aware adults.
So you're saying that the conventional wisdom that arts are a luxury in times of crisis is not really correct?
Well, the arts are a luxury if you're going to try to buy a Van Gogh, you know. But no, it's not correct. And it's not correct. And many people in many places in the world outside of the United States would acknowledge that you lose your national heritage, you lose your sense of rhetoric. You know, for example, it would be unthinkable in England to say that studying Shakespeare at the earliest of ages and knowing Shakespeare was a secondary and a privilege. No, it's part of, I've heard people when I was living in London say it's part of the development of our national character and our sense of independence and imaginative and having an imaginative life. I think that the fear of the arts drives a lot of the attempt to make them secondary. That is, the fear of young people speaking out or expressing themselves in ways that don't exactly fit the will of the people who are in power is dealt with by minimalizing the arts and marginalizing them.
We have a caller from Newark, David, who wants to jump into this conversation. Hi, David.
Hi. While I agree with your guest about the necessity of being developing sensitivity and all the things that he says, one who wants to do the three R's, who wants to concentrate on the three R's, could make a case that if they can't do their times tables, being sensitive really is not going to help them out in the world. Being an educator, being a music educator, I try to stress to my students that the discipline and the focus that they gain by studying music, especially vocal music, which is what I teach, is going to spill over into all their subjects. You know, being able to focus on a vocal piece and knowing what your part of the harmony is and remembering the lyrics and remembering the notes is helping your mind to develop in a way that's going to make you a better student in math or other subjects that are not necessarily related to music. So there's a pragmatic, there's a practical aspect that people should stress when they're trying to sell arts education to people who may not think it's that important and may want to cut it because of budget. So
and you're nodding your head, Rosie, as somebody who has been known to sing on a stage.
Yes, the arts allow you to develop your critical thinking, and it also allows you to develop your problem solving. And you know, in my arts charity, I was talking to Tom earlier, we have graphic design, and just just expressing their art through graphic design, that there's a lot of technical aspects to that program of ours that they have to really dig in deep, and they have to use their mathematical skills as well to express the art. And he's completely right, and I'm glad you said that, because I never was able to articulate it in that way. It is very pragmatic and essential.
My guests are Rosie Perez, Herbert Cole, and Tom Oppenheim. We're talking about the essential aspects of art for our culture and why cutbacks in the arts are perhaps counterproductive. But it's interesting, Tom. Have you noticed that although there's been a lot of bad financial news this year, it hasn't had much of an impact on the box office? Is that because as fewer people can afford to travel, they're looking for entertainment closer to home?
I suppose that's true. My area of expertise has to do with education and, you know, people that are interested in studying acting, and we haven't felt any negative impact. And I'm encouraged to understand that the arts actually suffer less from economic downturn, which is good news for us.
Although issues-oriented art, like films about Iraq, have tended to do poorly at the box office. Mm. It's usually escapist stuff, and I guess that was true during the Depression as well. Is there a theory here, or is it just that we don't want to be reminded of how awful things are? We have enough of it on the news.
People are looking for good news and escape. However, and I'm not an expert here, but it seems to me that the group theater thrived at the time of Depression, and that was a theater that was socially engaged and bringing a sense of reality and a sense of the needs of the people, and it was a welcomed message at that time.
Are you finding that people are more interested, Rosie, in making art that has some kind of a social connection, that's more political these days?
Yes and no. I think that people are much more interested in making that type of creating that type of story. But I think that generally your everyday working class American wants to escape, and I think that when we can marry the two, we would have a great outlet there. But I also think that the reason why the arts don't suffer in time of crisis, especially the theater, is because people want a human connection. You know, when you're feeling bad and you're feeling down, you need that emotion. You need that emotional connection, and it goes right back to the arts. Mm-hmm. You know, it goes right back to the arts.
Herb, how does this work with education? Because many people are concerned when educators become political, and you're on a panel with Maxine Green, another legendary educator, and William Ayers, who's an educator who's been in the news a lot recently on matters that have nothing to do with education.
Well, quite frankly, for me, it is not possible for an educator to not have politics and for that politics not to spill into the classroom. And I don't mean that in terms of propagandizing students. What I mean is in terms of, do you adopt a system that is trying, for example, to train kids for jobs as they are? That's making a political statement about the way in which you think the kids should fit into a society. If you're trying to help develop kids for the kind of jobs that they will find enriching and rewarding, whether or not they fit into the priorities of the society, then that's making a political statement. But I wanted to say one other thing. You know, in terms of the popularity of the arts, there is an enormous subculture, sometimes called the hip-hop generation, where young people are making the arts whether they're learning them in school or not, where through song, through spoken arts, through multimedia productions, through all of the kind of things that can come on in the intermediate, young people are becoming artists, and they're quite outstripping the capacity of most of the trained teachers of the arts and some of the teachers who teach art who are not trained or active artists themselves. And I think one of the really positive and exciting things that are going on in the culture, youth culture right now, is the number and the depth and the quality of the products that young people are having. The fact that they can conceive of themselves as running a radio station and doing youth radio, that they can make their own films now very, very easily, that they can have poetry jams and all kinds of other things. This is quite a sign that education doesn't only take place in schools, and that sometimes the education, the people's self-education and the communication they have with each other ends up affecting the schools.
My guests are Herbert Cole, the educator, Rosie Perez, actor and also social activist, and Tom Oppenheim, president and artistic director at the Stella Adler Studio of Acting. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. And we're back with Tom Oppenheim, president and artistic director of the Stella Adler Studio of Acting, with Rosie Perez, who is currently in Pineapple Express. Is that your most recent movie?
Yes.
We had David Gordon Green here to talk about that film when the film was coming out.
That's great.
And we have Herbert Cole here, who is one of America's leading educators, and as a New York boy, comes out of the Bronx High School of Science.
That's right.
And do you think that schools were very different in those days, Herb?
Well, I would have to say yes and no. Bronx Science was atypical in that it was a selective school where you had to take an exam to get in. The years I was in Bronx Science was during the McCarthy era. And so every step of, you know, we lost a lot of our teachers who were brought before the House Un-American Activities Committee. And education at Bronx Science at that particular time was very polarized and politicized. But I want to say...
I wonder what you think about the fight recently in New York schools over whether teachers could wear buttons promoting a candidate. Do you think that's a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, you know, again, it depends on what the teacher intends to do. Certainly, I don't see anything wrong with a teacher wearing a button, but I do see something wrong with a teacher trying to propagandize their students. I think, you know, I've been through that situation in almost every grade in which I have some pretty clear political and social ideas, but I've felt that to try to impose those ideas on my students would, first of all, falsify those ideas themselves, and second of all, try to get the kids to believe in, to pretend to believe in something in order to get my approval, when the whole idea of the kind of education I believe in is to get them to do something out of conviction and conscience and not for the sake of some external reward. But one thing I wanted to say about the schools, to answer your question, is I was on the Intercity Geo Council, and the big thing that was going on in the high schools in New York in 1951 to 54 was juvenile delinquency. Unmanageable students, the beginning of rock and roll, the corruption of culture. In other words, all of the kind of themes that exist now in the schools existed then. The main difference...
Blackboard Jungle was a hit movie.
That's absolutely right. And many, many kids used Blackboard Jungle, in a sense, as a role model for their behavior, whether the kids were themselves middle class or were actually engaged in living in poor communities and really engaged in violence. Everybody would strut the same way. But I think the difference now, which has to affect the behavior of teachers and the way in which people, kids feel, is that those days there were no guns. Yeah. And I think that the whole climate of fear that's been created with the idea that the school is potentially not a safe place is in fact very different now than it was when I was when I was in high school.
Rosie, when you are politically active, and I suspect I know who you're going to vote for in the next election, what do you think about actors stating their opinions? Some people think it's totally irrelevant, and I want to do a follow-up question, which is, what happens when you're cast with somebody whose politics you know are totally the opposite of yours? Can you still maintain the chemistry in a love scene?
Yes. Yes, I can fake it. No,
that's called acting,
it's
right?
It's called acting, thank you. Your first question is, I think that whether you're an actor or if you're a carpenter or what have you, you have a right to express your political point of view because this is America.
What about Joe the plumber?
Oh, my goodness.
But do you have to be a plumber to express your opinion if you call Joe the plumber?
You have the right, but it gets irritating. here's the thing here. When I was out on the road campaigning for Obama, on behalf of Obama with Congresswoman Nidia Velasquez, you know, I was telling all the people that were Democrats, that are Democrats, you know, you're screaming at your fellow Republican and you're getting angry at them. They're not hearing you. They are not hearing you. They are a person just as you are, and you must respect them, and you must speak with them with dignity and intelligence. And otherwise, we're not going to get anywhere. No one's going to hear you. And going back to the arts system, you know, with my charity, Urban Arts Partnership, we have 45 schools. In regards to what he just said in regards to behavioral problems, it is a huge concern. It's a huge issue. And you know, in our class where we have slam poetry, art, and we have poetry, you know, you get a kid up there who's a problem child, and you say, write it down. And he writes it down, and his first attempt may not be perfect, and he stands up in front of a class scared to death, and he just spews all this anger out, and he gets applause. His heart is swelling. And he can't wait to write the next thing down, and it becomes better and better and more articulate, and then all of a sudden he becomes a nice person. And all of a sudden, everything that you've tried to train him to go get a job, you cannot get a job if you do not have interpersonal skills. He's going to be able to relate to the person standing in front of him and shake his hand and say, or her hand, and say, good afternoon, ma'am, good afternoon, sir, how are you? I would love to have a job at this place.
Tom, this brings us to something you've created, the Stella Adler Outreach Division. That involves urban youth who might not have any contact with the arts.
That's right, and it's relevant to this issue of actors being political and or socially engaged and so on. The Stella Adler Outreach Division has a dual mission to bring free actor training to inner-city youth and people who can't pay tuition, but also to provide our full-time students who do pay tuition with a model of social engagement. Yes, indeed. That's very beautiful, Rosie. We have the same experience. We deal with kids, we feel, who receive a message from the world in which they live that their voice is of less value, is in fact often of no value. And the process of training actors is very much has very much to do with the process of bringing people to voice, of bringing people to their voice. And it's always moving. It's always deeply gratifying. But when you bring people to voice who are receiving very strong messages from their neighborhoods, from the city, from their schools, from the world around them that they are of no value, it is especially gratifying.
But you also believe in giving the broadest education, because I was surprised when I looked at the school and realized that you're not just teaching acting, as most acting schools do, but that you're also putting people in contact with poetry, with jazz, with classical music, with dance.
That's right. That's right. The mission of the school grows out of the idea that growth as an actor and growth as a human being are synonymous. And the mission is to nurture theater artists who value humanity as their first priority, who value humanity, their own and others, as their first priority. And for us, that has to do, and this really grows out of my my heritage, with a lively relationship to many arts, to dance, poetry, music, jazz and classical music, and so on. And also, in fact, to the world. So that, I mean, I'm sensitive because I have strong political and social points of view, and I don't want to impose those points of view on our students. But I do feel that it's good for them, that it's necessary for them, especially being brought up within this tradition that I represent, which begins with the Yiddish theater and then the group theater and Harold and Stella and so on.
Stella Adler, your grandmother.
Stella Adler, my grandmother. To have them be confronted with realities in the world, to help them to expand their awareness and consciousness, that their work as an actor, as a theater person, or if they don't end up as actors and theater persons, as Rosie was saying, their contribution to the world is informed by an expanded sense of awareness.
We have a caller, Alexa. Is it Alexis?
Moore? Alexios.
Alexios, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks. Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the kind of an alternative, positive aspect of arts education outside of the political conscientization and the positive socialization that the guests have mentioned. I work in the public schools as a teacher and then also as a teaching artist, and sort of what's happened as public schools have divested in the arts, you know, teaching arts nonprofits have come in to fill the gap, and they're funded by foundations that kind of, you know, have their own goals in mind. But so those teaching artists, it tends to skew more towards the political conscientization and the social aspects and the sort of the free expression, as opposed to the actual professional development of the young people as artists. So in kind of these underserved communities where there used to be a portfolio system in junior high school, there no longer is. So I just kind of wanted to stress the kind of practical economic aspect of teaching arts programs, in that, you know, we have a vibrant new media and arts-driven economy, and, you know, these young people need can find jobs as designers, as artists, et cetera.
Yeah, I would like to second what you said. And in fact, I believe, and I'm not positive about the statistics, but I believe that there are more people actually working in the entertainment industry and in the arts in the United States than there are currently working in the automobile industry. I mean, it's really staggering how many people are actually employed in the arts in one way or another. Everything from agents and lawyers to performing artists to tech people to lighting people to publicity people. The arts is in fact a major part of our economic and social culture, but it's not acknowledged as such in the schools.
Rosie
was just agreeing with you.
I got excited. Go ahead.
Finish your point, Herb.
I'm sorry.
What? What is my point?
No. Rosie was just nodding her head. In effect, she said,
okay.
"That's right."
And so what you find, the irony is that schools are not training kids for the jobs that are available. They're training kids for jobs, as Obama said, for 20th century jobs in the 21st century.
Herb, I do have to point out that there are no GOs in the high schools anymore here in New York. When you mentioned that being part of the GO,
yes,
there are a whole
president.
Bunch of people under the age of, I don't know what, 40 or so, who said, what the heck is that?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is the GOs meant that there was a student council in every school and that the student council had a voice in some of the main issues at the schools, not in curriculum and not in hiring and firing of teachers, but in the social life at the schools, in grievances and things of that sort. And the Intercity GO Council, here's the funny thing is, when I was president of the Intercity GO Council in 1954, I had a program twice a month on WNYC, in which the student...
Welcome back.
That's right. And the student representative, a student voice, traditionally appeared on WMYC and in a Board of Education newsletter representing the voice of the young. And I can see things like that as still incredibly valuable. I'm really sorry they don't exist anymore.
Now, Rosie, when you were going to school, were there arts programs available to you?
Yes, there were. It was a great thing because I was such an angry person when
Where
I was...
Where were you going to school?
Well, I first started out in Catholic school and then St. Joseph Catholic School. And then I went to public school and I went to Grover Cleveland High School. And the art programs there were not as great. But I love Grover Cleveland. and then junior high school was pretty good. But the great thing about the arts program for me was, since I was so angry, I was the class clown, but outside of being the class clown, I was very introverted. And anything could just set me off. And I remember on a class trip, we went to go see The Wiz. That's dating myself, but with Stephanie Mills. And I remember seeing someone of color up on a Broadway stage, and I was crying from start to finish. And
because there was a chance that you might also be able to do something like that.
No, it was because she was articulating the sorrow that I was feeling at the time, where she felt like she didn't have a home of her own and she, you know, just didn't belong and she was an outsider. And just that connection that I felt just changed me dramatically.
Are you all concerned, I'll ask you this first, Tom, about the economic crisis? Banks were the second largest corporate givers to U.S. nonprofits in 2007, behind pharmaceutical companies. Finance houses like Bear Stearns and Lehman were generous donors. AIG was a generous donor. In fact, Hank Greenberg was one of the and some of the founders of AIG were among the creators of the World Monuments Trust Fund and other organizations like that. And much of that is going to be cut back. Where do you think the funding is going to come from? And does Stella Adler, do you rely on that kind of funding?
Well, we're lucky we don't, in fact. I am very concerned, though. I feel that that's an area that's going to be very difficult for not-for-profits, particularly those that rely on grants and foundation gifts and so on, corporate giving. We rely primarily on tuition, although we are a 501c3 not-for-profit, and my plans to grow the school into an arts center with theater at its core, those I feel are compromised by the economy. It's of deep concern to me.
Are you seeing it in California as well, Herb?
Yes, we're seeing lots and lots. Well, people are working on their current budgets, but have basically been told that, and in particular, the smaller arts organizations have been told that they will either be eliminated from budgets or cut way back. The irony is recently a series of awards have been announced, and the opera keeps on getting its funds, and the symphony keeps on getting its funds, whereas small cultural theaters are the ones who are really suffering the most. And I think people are really kind of looking around to find ways to get more community-based support and more support through outreach on the internet and through, but it's a dilemma, and people were not prepared for this to happen as fast as it's happening.
Now, you will be on a panel with Maxine Green and William Ayers on Sunday. Rosie, you're going to be in one of the most star-studded panels I think anybody's ever put together. You, Anna Deavere Smith, Felicia Rashad, and Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah.
you think you could get a word in edgewise?
Oh, I don't know. But they got a lot of great things to say, so I won't mind if I'm just sitting there nodding.
And Tom, where is all of this taking place?
Well, the Sunday panel with that Herb, and it's also Francis Lucerna, Maxine Green, William Maris, and Herb Cole. That will be at the Stella Adler Studio. That's 31 West 27th Street. The Monday night panel's at the Great Hall in Cooper Union, so down on 7th Street.
And if people want more information, they can go to our show page at WNYC.org. It's all listed there. I think the other events as well are listed there. And my great thanks to the three of you for being on our show today, Herbert Cole, Rosie Perez, and Tom Oppenheim.
Thank you.
Thank you.